Walking into a hospital can feel like walking into some sort of machine that's already decided that you're a problem to manage, not a person to care for. When you walk in, first you gotta hand over your personal information, then you hand over some valuables, then your clothes, and then you sit and wait. And the waiting starts to mess with your head because it seems to be telling you that you don't have any control over the situation. Have you ever left an appointment feeling small, shut down, brushed off? There is a way to take your power back without turning into a pain in the ass. Dr. Pamela Pyle, our guest today, has spent her life inside hospitals, including the VA, and she breaks down how to ask better questions, how to push for what you're owed, and how to protect your rights when the first answer is no. Then our conversation is going to shift into something even bigger than medicine, into a way that you can live your life that makes the end of life less scary in the middle of life more meaningful, especially when hope is running thin, which for a lot of veterans, unfortunately, that's the situation they're finding themselves in. Before we get into this episode, though, I want to take a moment to raise awareness for something that's deeply important to our community, the Global War on Terrorism Memorial Foundation. This organization is working to build a permanent national memorial in Washington, D.C. to honor the service members, families, and civilians who are impacted by the global war on terrorism. This memorial serves as both a tribute to those who have served and a way to ensure that their sacrifices are recognized and remembered for generations to come. If you'd like to learn more or find out how you can support their mission, visit GWATMemorialFoundation.org. Now let's get into today's episode. Hey, Pamela, welcome to the podcast. I'm really glad to have you here. Looking forward to this conversation.
I am so thankful to be here. And I just love what you're doing in honoring our veterans and active armed forces the way that you are. It's so important. Oh, yeah. And I feel very privileged to be included.
Well, I appreciate that. And, you know, there's so many people out there who have been struggling in one way or another, who either are currently serving or have served, and they just don't know where to turn, and they have all sorts of questions, and they don't know who to ask, or whatever the case may be. Maybe they had a bad experience with, you know, one thing that they tried to do or whatever, and it just seems like it's kind of hopeless. And that's kind of where this podcast was born from. It was basically just to give some hope and inspiration to folks who are out there struggling, and they don't know where else to turn. Sometimes they're just isolated by themselves. And, you know, if they find this podcast and they find some information that's useful to them, then, you know, that I chalk that up as a win, and we can help some folks out. But before we kind of move on and get into this conversation, I'd love for you to maybe just start by introducing yourself and tell us a little bit about yourself and your journey and your work in medicine and work with any kind of veterans that you might have worked with and all that kind of stuff, just for the listeners maybe who aren't familiar with you.
So my name is Dr. Pamela Pyle, and I grew up in a very small town in Oklahoma and really had no plans for even college out of high school. Went to work as a dental assistant, and I, you know, there are certain times when God intervenes in your life with people, and one of those was the dentist that I worked for, who said, you know, you're too smart to be working right now as a dental assistant and young. And I was early married, and I didn't believe in myself till he believed in me. And so I started going to night school while I was still working. And at the same time, my dad, who is also a veteran, Air Force, who had started in the Air Force at 18, and then as he finished with that part of his career, he became a mechanic. And then he decided to go to college and medical school. And thank goodness for the educational benefits through the armed forces. He was able to go to college and then ultimately medical school. And we ended up being at medical school at the same time. Oh, and then that's cool. It was very cool. he returned to the armed forces, the Air Force after that, and was overseas for a large part of my later years. And then I, you know, was accepted to the same school he was and loved it. It was in Texas. And then I wanted to do my residency in really a community that represented all walks of life. And so I was fortunate to be chosen by Baylor School of Medicine. And what I loved about that, now, Scott, this was probably way before you were born, is it was 1989 when it started.
Yeah, and, not before I was born, but I appreciate the...
Well, medical residency, you graduate in May from school. July 4th is always known as like this crazy time and almost a risk for patients because you now have new interns entering the system of education. And my first month of rounds was an internal medicine ward at the Veteran Hospital in Houston. And the thing about that experience, and I did several more rounds there, but you know, when you're first there and like you're called a doctor, there's a lot of weight to it that you didn't realize until like you're the one that the nurses call at night. And we would, of course, stay in the hospital. And what I remember about the BA at that time is it had the longest hallway in any government building in the U.S.
Oh, wow.
And it was long. I mean, it just seemed like a mile from going from the medical side over to the surgical side. You know, sometimes you're running. And unlike a lot of hospitals, there were medical wards where, you know, bed by bed by bed, not a lot of privacy, a central nursing station. But, you know, the thing about the veterans that I and others that were there is that they love that camaraderie. You know, there was no sense of, oh, I'm not getting my private space or, oh, I'm not getting this or that. I always felt like they were so grateful for any kind of care that they received.
Sure.
And it taught me a lot about grittiness because I'll tell you, they were so strong, had so many stories. As an intern, you know, I was the first around and I would love to sit on the side of the bed and just hear stories. And they loved to tell them. And in the midst of that, you know, we'd get to the medical part of it. But I've always loved learning from individuals from different aspects and walks of life. And I think that's why I love being a doctor is you just, the more you listen, and in fact, it's said that if you listen long enough, they'll give you a diagnosis. Mm-hmm. So they were incredible. It also was a time when HIV and AIDS was just being diagnosed and early treatments. One of my first patients that died in the VA hospital from AIDS. And it was devastating for a lot of different reasons, but mostly because I had cared for him for so many days. And I just admired his strength. And one of the things that I've written about is there should never be shame attached to a disease. And he had a lot of shame. But he was still loved by, you know, everybody in the ward. And he had a crazy kind of laugh that was infectious. And I just remember the day that he got worse suddenly and I didn't know God at all. I'd never been in church in my life at that point. But I remember walking out of the hospital and just saying, God, if you're real, you know, please save him. And I came in the next morning and he was gone. And so, of course, you know, that had a lot of God questions to it, but that's a whole nother story.
Sure.
But the other fun thing about the veterans that time is everybody smoked. In fact, even the oncologists smoked as they did their rounds with the little tray. And there was always such a great, like, you could just walk out there, and if they weren't in their bed, they were outside smoking in the smoking area, you know, and just hooting and hollering and telling stories. And,
sure,
you know, it was an honor to serve them.
Yeah. And, you know, when you were talking about your residency and, you know, wanting to work with kind of a diverse group of people, my first thought was, well, what better group of people than a group of veterans or service members or whatever, because they come from all walks of life. They come from all over the country, sometimes other parts of the world. I know, you know, there's some people who aren't even Americans and they want to fight in the American military. I had one guy, he was from Jamaica in my basic training. And so it's like people come from all over the place, and you'll get a wide, wide variety of folks mm-hmm. who want to serve. And so it's real, real interesting. And then when you get those people together, like you said, in kind of like an open bay type area, it's probably not a privacy thing that people are worried about, because you start building that camaraderie with the guy in the bed next to you and, you know, across the room or whatever. And you kind of start to bond together, you know. Yeah. You guys are all going through the same kind of, you know, different diagnoses, is probably different diseases mm-hmm. or different, whatever conditions that they're going through, but you're all going through this crappy time all at the same time. And, mm-hmm. and so there's that shared suffering aspect of it that a lot of times brings folks together. And I know from my own experience, some of those moments, while in the moment, it sucks and it seems like it's terrible and miserable and everything like that, but after the fact, when you look back and it's like, wow, that was one of the greatest bonding experiences I think I've ever had with, you know, a group of guys, and brought mm-hmm. us so much closer because we were able to have that type of experience. And so, you know, it's just, you know, interesting to see the different dynamics in a military or veteran space. And so mm-hmm. for someone who maybe didn't have a ton of experience, I know you said your father, you know, served, but maybe didn't have a ton of experience with the overall military community and all the folks who make it up, you know, probably I would imagine you're probably pretty glad that you were able to get such a diverse group of people to work with, and probably diverse, you know, conditions that they were dealing with and everything, but it was certainly, you know, a very diverse group, I'm sure, right?
Totally. Very diverse, as you said. My great-grandfather and his brother, they were Native American, Western Cherokee, and their parents had died, and they were adopted by a wealthy woman who mistreated them. So they both signed up for the First World War, and my great-granduncle, he was a prisoner of war and actually a really terrible documented death. Mm-hmm. And of course, my great-grandfather made it home. But it's always been a part of our history, and for Western Cherokees, if you have a drop of Cherokee blood, you're considered fully Cherokee. And so I'm part of the Western tribe and my grandchildren and children, and I'm very honored by that. But because of that, I went back and started looking at the history of both African Americans, Caribbean Americans, and those that were Native. And so many of those fought from 1776 to later wars, mm-hmm. always with the promise of freedom or land, and never actually fulfilled promises. Yeah. So I'm very like sensitive to that subject of like the variety of people and recognizing that everyone that fights lays down their life for us. And I have a saying that we may not be able to serve our country as veterans have, but the way we serve our veterans is the way we serve our country. And that's every single one of us. We yeah. all can play a role in making their lives better, and our active military, our first responders. And so that's part of my mission and part of yours.
Yeah, no, and that's a great way to look at it too. I mean, you know, not everyone serves, and that's fine. There's other ways to serve your country, to serve the folks who served and things like that. So there's plenty of ways to do it. It's just, you know, what's right for that individual. And so that's, you know, a great way to look at it. I want to kind of move forward a little bit here, and I want to talk a little bit about your book. And, you know, while it's not specific to veterans, it does offer guidance for navigating healthcare and things along those lines. Tell us a little bit about the book and kind of how you see it kind of fitting in this space as far as the veterans and their families and folks like that.
Well, truly, whether you're a veteran or a civilian entering the healthcare system, but especially for veterans, it's difficult. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, it's difficult to navigate. Almost everyone, the first answer is no, because they're told to say no first. And then there's a real what's called stripping process, where from the moment you enter the healthcare system, we'll say hospital, you know, you're handing over your information, all your private information, then you're handing over your valuables, and then ultimately you hand over your clothes to sit and wait. And the waiting process is actually part of a control aspect of an over under, and it makes those that are waiting feel less than. So as a physician who's worked in hospitals all of my career, as well as also working in Rwanda in villages, I just felt like there's such a big miss if we don't educate patients. And not that physicians or nurses in the moment wouldn't like to educate more. They are just, they're not afforded enough time. Mm-hmm. And in fact, that's becoming more and more of an issue, whether you're a veteran entering the hospital system or a civilian entering a private hospital. And so time is money, essentially. But I will say, my father, who's just gone through prostate cancer and been seen at the VA hospital in Shreveport, Louisiana, he loved his medical experience. One, he'd stopped being a doctor after about 5 years. That he went back to being a farmer, that he loved hanging out again with his fellow soldiers and hearing stories. Now they're older, living with the same disease. But the best thing, and what my book does, is knowledge is power. And so understanding how your system works gives you a sense, one, of confidence, two, gives you a feeling of some power that's been taken away by the stripping effect. And so what I do is teach the principles of gaining power. So these are the questions to ask. This is, regardless of system, this is how to get a second opinion. These are your rights, patient or veteran or active military. And this is how to make sure that you are getting the best care possible. And there is something true about the squeaky wheel gets the grease, because sometimes, especially as a veteran, when you're kind of, you might be a serviceman and you're used to following orders, you're not there still. And you have rights mm-hmm. that you need to protect them. And so the book gives a lot of that kind of information from your very first diagnosis all the way to your last. And then for family members, how to care best when someone faces an illness.
Yeah. And when veterans or anyone really, when someone is facing maybe a serious diagnosis and, you know, potentially life-threatening diagnosis, whether it's cancer or heart disease or you name it, there's all sorts of things out there that can get us. Something's going to get us. We all have an expiration date. So, you know, there's something will get us at some point, but at some point that diagnosis becomes serious, potentially life-threatening and things like that. And you have a concept of a good death as a lifestyle. And I thought that was kind of an interesting way to phrase things, because it's kind of like you're putting two opposite things, a death and a lifestyle mm-hmm. together. And it's like, but I kind of wanted to dig into that a little bit and talk a little bit more about this concept and kind of how that might shift someone's perspective, maybe even when they're facing something serious, like a, mm-hmm. you know, a potentially life-threatening illness or something.
So the phrase "a good death" came from a patient of mine that truly on the day before her death was so confident of her good death. And I was going to miss her. I'm just, you know, I'm so emotional at the thought of losing her, even though she was at the end of her disease and she was ready. And she comforted me with saying, "It's okay, I will have a good death." And, you know, at this point, I have now believed in God and believed in faith and found my hope in that. And I felt like God used that phrase to just make me look at my own mortality and what I thought about my own death, even though at that point I was 30 years of around death and dying and trauma and all the things you see in hospitals. I hadn't considered it for myself. So I spent about a year thinking about, well, what is a good death? And when I say a good death is not an event, it's a lifestyle. It's not an event in that it's not like the moment you take your last breath, or even the dying process. A good death is when you can look back at your life and know that you've lived a meaningful life. So it's really not even about dying. It's about each of us, like, examining our life now. What adds meaning? What adds value? What's my purpose? How can I build into the lives of others? And, you know, sometimes I watch funny pet videos because, you know, I just enjoy, you know, have fun along the way.
Yeah.
And so the number one regret people have at the end of life is that they didn't live the life they were meant to. And so that's what I encourage them is, don't get to the very end and go, "I wish I would have." You'll have a good death basically on how you had a good life. Mm-hmm. And that begins for all of us today. And that began with me after I heard that and contemplated it. And yes, there's a dying journey. And there's so many things that we can do now to make it less fearful. And most of all, we can still have hope, and hopelessness kills.
Yeah.
As you know, in the veteran population, when they lose hope, that's when suicide happens and mm-hmm. homelessness and all the terrible things that our veterans face is they feel hopeless. And I just want to speak hope to them. And my hope has come through my faith, but also just my purpose and feeling like I'm here for a reason.
Sure.
I'll go tell them when it's time. But for right now, I'm here for a reason.
Right, exactly. And I think that's just a great way to think about it too, because you're right. There are so many people who just lose hope. And I was talking about this kind of at the beginning of the episode where, you know, I was kind of talking about basically the purpose of this podcast in general, and not just this episode, but just, you know, all the episodes combined is really mm-hmm. for those folks who maybe feel like they're losing hope. They have maybe tried some things and it isn't working out for them. They don't see their life really turning around. And, you know, like there are some stories of inspiration and hope and encouragement on this show. And, you know, this being one of them where it kind of just gives a different perspective on death is that's one end of it, you know, so thinking of, you know, where are you going to be in X number of years, whatever, however much time we have left, none of us really know, but you know, where are you going to be at that point? And when you look back, what are you looking back on? And what are you going to see that you've accomplished? What was your purpose? Did you do all the things that you wanted to do in life? And were you fulfilled? Were all those things, you know, happening? And if you can look at it right now and say, okay, what if today was that day, that today's your last day, and you look back and you say, well, no, I didn't really do nearly anything that I wanted to accomplish. I didn't really feel like I had much of a purpose. Well, then now's the time to change that. And now's the time to start figuring out what your purpose is, what is going to give you that sense of fulfillment. And when you're living a life that's fulfilled and you feel like you have a sense of purpose, then that kind of moves you away from that depression, that suicidal thinking, and all of those negative things. You kind of just shift away from those to a point where you are happy, and you're mm-hmm. and I'm not saying you're gonna be happy every single day.
You begin to live beyond yourself, and yeah, when you right. live beyond how you're feeling emotionally inside,
yeah,
all of a sudden it may be an hour, it may be a day that you go, I didn't really like feel that internal angst mm-hmm. because I was focusing outward. But it's a big, you know, okay, purpose. What does that mean for me in my world? You know, and I think for those that have been in the military, you know, they're so strengthened by understanding their purpose mm-hmm. and serving is a righteous purpose.
Yeah.
But yeah. serving can be a righteous purpose, even if it's like going to your local veterans hospital and saying, okay, I'm a mess, but I want to help you check in other vets as they're mm-hmm. getting admitted to the hospital. And it starts with the little things, but I also know that this administration is bringing some amazing mental health solutions to particularly our military. And we have to, you know, hold out for that. That's what I'm saying. Hold out for that, because there are so many things that can help you. Right. And don't have to think of the big picture right now. Just make it till tomorrow.
Yeah. And there are, like you said, there are so many things out there. And I've said this before to folks on this show, but you know, if you are sitting there and you're saying to yourself, yeah, you know, I've tried a bunch of different things. I feel like I've tried everything and it's nothing seems to be working. I gotta imagine you haven't tried everything. There are so many things out there. There are all different types of mental health treatments. There are, you know, even, you know, I know a lot of people don't like the medications, but some of those medications might be exactly what you need to get over whatever that hump is that you might be dealing with. Or it could be therapy, or it could be some other type of thing. There are just so many things out there. And if you haven't done all of the things, you still have a reason to wake up tomorrow, because tomorrow is the day that you can go try that other thing. And, mm-hmm. and then the next day after that, and same thing, so on and so forth. But you know, the more you do, the closer you're going to get to whatever the solution is that's right for you. You know, not every single solution is going to be right for everybody. So yeah, you might have to try it out. Maybe you've gone to therapy and you didn't like the therapist that you had. Okay. Well, there are thousands of other therapists that you can choose from and go to somebody else. And that's okay. I don't think any therapists are going to, you know, take it personally. It's, hey, it wasn't a good fit, you know, just like anything else. I mean, you go on a date with someone, it's not a good fit. You're not going to continue going on a date with that person if it's, you know what I mean? It just doesn't make sense. So, you know, same idea with a therapist. If it's not a good fit, it's not a good fit, and move on to somebody else. And that's okay. You know, and I think, you know, even things like you were talking about, you kind of came to your faith and religion and things along this journey that you were talking about, that probably, I'd imagine, shifted your perspective on a lot of things in life in general. And, you know, not just your profession and dealing with sick people and people who are, you know, dealing with injuries and all these kind of things, but just life in general. And so for folks who haven't experienced that themselves, that's something else you can give a shot. You know, like if you haven't had any sort of faith in your life, well, maybe open your eyes to that. And that might be the thing that you're missing. And that might be the thing that drags you out of that dark hole that you might be in. Right.
I can say for me, you know, I've dealt with depression periodically through my years, and I was at the end of myself. And the thing that I realized is I was 7 years into my medical practice. I had a wonderful family. I had everything that the world would go. It's like, wow, you should have it all together. And I didn't. In fact, I was kind of a mess inside. Mm-hmm. And I was alone by myself. And my husband had come to faith 2 years before. And I, like I said, I had no church experience. I thought he was crazy. But I finally was like, I've tried everything else. You know, Jesus, would you just like give me a little peace? And for me in that moment, it's like it's yesterday. It's 1996, March. It was the beginning of feeling different. Mm-hmm. Everyone finds different journeys, but that was the beginning of like experience a new life journey that really led me to my purpose in Rwanda. And, you know, it's just shaped my life. And that does not mean that my life got perfect or I didn't have other episodes of depression, but I always had hope, and I have hope. And I just would like to say for those, you know, that are searching, particularly with PTSD, there are so many good treatments, you know, from EMDR, which is a certain kind of therapy, to deep nerve stimulation in the cervical spine, a single treatment. And there's so much hope for you. And it can feel hopeless, especially when there are so many beside you that also have the same thing. And that's part of like my white flag app. We've talked about that, Scott, I think is helpful because you talk to other people with similar things, but perhaps further along the journey of getting better. And that's why I'm honored to be on the medical advisory board for that.
Yeah, that was actually something that I wanted to bring up and mention. It kind of slipped my mind as we were kind of going through the conversation here. But would you be able to tell us a little bit more about White Flag App and for anyone who might be unfamiliar with it and mm-hmm. and you know what that's all about and what it entails?
Yeah, so the founder was someone who was arrested incorrectly. And while he was spending the night in jail, his person in the jail cell committed suicide in front of him. And he was traumatized and left college and dealt with addictions and ultimately got help and then went back to school and law school. And he has dedicated his life to helping those with mental health and providing access to mental health care. So one of the things that he's done is develop White Flag app, and it's on the App Store. It's absolutely free. And they're essentially, if you're in a crisis or if you just need to talk to someone and you have, let's say you're a veteran and you're depressed and considering suicide, you can raise your flag and enter those information. And the people that are in your lane are also veterans, and someone will respond to your flag. And a lot of times it's hard for you guys, and I'm speaking not from knowledge, but just observation and talking. It's hard to talk to people. It's hard sometimes even to talk to your spouse about all that you're feeling. Mm-hmm. But it's better to talk to someone who's gone through the same thing. I mean, you have an immediate connection because they understand things more than anyone else, whether it's a doctor or a spouse, commanding officer, but someone that's just like you. So it's a great opportunity to connect, and then also a great opportunity to find purpose, because as you're helped, you may be the person that's sitting there watching who right now is feeling like I was, and how can I help them? And it's just a peer-to-peer app of connecting in a safe environment with those that are like you.
Yeah, and that's great. Again, it's another resource which maybe some folks who are listening right now, they didn't know about this before. And I would encourage them right now, if this is something that they sounds like it would be useful to you, like, stop listening right now, go to the App Store, download it onto your phone or your tablet or whatever, you know, device you're using, and use it and get the benefit of, you know, that peer-to-peer support. Again, like you said, from folks who know what you've been through, who've been through similar things themselves. Nobody's been through the exact same thing that you've been through, you know, that everyone has different experiences, different perspectives and whatnot. So, but they know enough about what it is that you've gone through that they can be able to speak intelligently to you and make you feel like, hey, you know what? You're not alone. There are other people out there who have experienced something very similar. And, you know, while raising a white flag might feel like defeat, it's actually, in this case, it's not. It's mm-hmm. It's basically saying, hey, I need some help. I need someone to just give me that little bit of encouragement, that some whatever it is that you need. You're raising that flag saying, I can't do it myself. And
you're just saying, I need someone to step in for a little bit.
Yeah, right.
Give me an assist.
Exactly. And if you think about any of the service members, you know, basically nothing that you do in the military is on your own. You're doing everything in a team of, you know, it could be as small as a couple people. It could be, you know, up to, you know, a platoon, company, you know, battalion size, whatever the size elements that you're talking about. You're working together with other people to accomplish a mission. And if you're sitting there thinking to yourself, well, I was in the military, I should be able to do anything. Well, you weren't expected to do it all on your own back then. Now, why should you be expected to do it all on your own right now? You know,
that is,
reach out.
That's a brilliant point, Scott. You know, I mean, we all needed to hear that. But yeah. That is so true.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the military might make you feel like you're, you know, almost invincible, or you're this big, tough, you know, tough guy or whatever, and you can handle anything. But to be honest, most of us can't handle everything that gets thrown our way. Sometimes it's too much, and we need to reach out for help. I know I did, and I continue to get help, and it's just part of the things that I go through, and there's no shame in it. I don't think anyone is out there thinking, oh my gosh, what a lunatic, he's going to get help. Like, no, like that would be ridiculous. So, like, you know,
it's a sign of courage.
Exactly.
And you're still a big tough guy. Yeah. If you made it through base camp, you're a big tough guy or girl.
Yeah, right. Yeah, I mean, if you can handle the things that the military is throwing at you, you're still tough in my book too. Yeah, I get it. You know, so I think, you know, looking ahead, you know, for the listeners here, I think just kind of some key takeaways here. One, check out that White Flag app. That's just a huge benefit. Even if you don't need it right now, you know, download it, because you never know. You might need it down the road. Maybe even someone who you know might be struggling, and it might be just that little bit of a reminder to say, hey, why don't you download this app too? And, you know, that might be just a good thing to have. So, you know, I'm sure it's not taking up too much space on the phone. Just download it until you have it in your pocket. And then, you know, finding that sense of purpose or community or those interactions with other people, and having that ability to look back at your life later on when you're approaching your death. And I've heard other people describe this as, you know, the dash in between your birth date and your date of death is, you know, on your tombstone, there's that dash in between. That's that's where you are right now. You're somewhere on that line, that little dash in between those two dates, and make it as good as you can. Why not? You only have one life to live, and make it as good of a life as you possibly can, and enjoy things and find purpose. And, you know, when you do help other people, like, you know, someone like yourself as a doctor, and, you know, there's plenty of other professions out there who are helping people, but that fulfills your sense of purpose and well-being and all those kind of things. And it's just a great way to, you know, go through life. So, you know, for those listeners, I think those are kind of some of the key takeaways from this episode. You know, anything else before we wrap up here that you might want to add to the conversation?
Just real quickly. Mm-hmm. First, I want to say, as someone that's been in the military, you're already like done an amazing thing on your dash. Don't discount that. Don't regret that. Second, we always, you know, our family and those we serve with in different ways want to recognize our veterans. And so in your home state, Scott, Arizona, we had the first Day of Gratitude in 2024, where we had the Raiders Stadium and 15,000 military there that received everything from, you know, claim service to over $2 million of free goods, healthcare services, a concert all day, listening to leadership. And the next one is June 6, 2026, in also the LA Raiders Stadium, hosted by CityServe, which I serve with as well. And the goal is 20,000. I'd love to see as many as possible, even if we have to go above that. And it's an amazing day, and you deserve all the gratitude that you'll receive then.
That's awesome. And, you know, yeah, I'll try to grab a link to that and put that in the show notes as well for folks, so that they can check that out and maybe put it on their calendar. I know this episode's coming out a couple of months before that, but still no time like the present to put something on the calendar and plan for the future. So you have that date blocked off, mm-hmm. anyways, you know, if you're going to be in that area. And so, Pamela, thank you so much again for coming on, sharing your story and sharing a little
bit
of hope and
inspiration. Thank you for what you do. And I didn't know what drive-on meant. And now I do. And I love the name, and I understand the secret meaning of it, you know, and you're just incredible what you do.
I appreciate that so much. Thanks again.